Good evening, everyone. Last session of the day. Yeah. Who drew the short straw for presenting this session, eh? Well, it's good to see a couple of guys have turned up. It's quite nice. My name is Morgan Webb. I work at Microsoft. I'm a technical evangelist. I focus on getting our customers and partners ready for the next wave of technologies that come out from Microsoft. So when they do become generally available, our partners and our customers are ready to deploy them, use them in the environment. That's my Twitter handle. I kind of use it to share as much publicly facing information as it comes out from Microsoft. I kind of push it out. So if you're into Twitter and getting information quite quickly, you're more than welcome to hit me on that, ask questions. I'll gladly provide information. My focus areas are on clients and server as a platform and the management thereof on top of that. So I look at a lot of the system center components. I have a passion for virtualization. And I also have a passion for something new that I've learned since joining Microsoft, and that's around the ability to make dynamic environments for developers. So as a traditional IT professional, we're always very focused on a request comes in for a virtual machine, for an operating system. Okay, great, provision, there you go. Go do whatever you need to do as a developer. However, in the last year or so, I've noticed a lot of our tools have slowly become deployed and set up around the integration of the two components. And so I have developed quite a passion for develop operations and how we can enable developers to have a dynamic infrastructure, the ability to run and test code at the click of a button, opposed to putting in a request for infrastructure, having their own dedicated infrastructure they have to maintain, kind of getting them to work together. It's kind of hard to see out in the crowd, but as a show of hands, who are IT professionals in the audience? So maybe a quick show of hands. We look after back-end infrastructure. Oh, that's much better. Developers, I'm assuming everyone else. Great, so it's quite a good mixture. So traditionally, the request process, the cycle is really, I need infrastructure, I need to test my code, I need to test my applications, revise, make some changes, test again, go through those relevant cycles. And there's always been this divide between developers and IT professionals. It's a traditional divide, it's worldwide, make no mistake. I do this session at quite a few places around the world. That divide is worldwide. And really, we're trying to work really hard on getting the message across that for a successful dynamic environment, the two need to work hand in hand, back and forward in a continual cycle. So I've got quite a few slides in the deck, but I've hidden quite a lot of them. I've realized that it's a 6:30 kickoff. It's quite late in the evening. I'm sure you've seen one or two PowerPoint slides today. So the content is there. Whatever I'm gonna talk about, the slides are there. I have quite a lot of content that I've customized and left in the notes section of each of the slides. So you can either get it off the hub site, or you can actually message me directly, and I'll gladly send you the PowerPoint. Ideally, what I'd like to do is just set the tone of what we want to go through, and I'd like to show you some content focused around two areas. One is providing infrastructure and the ability from the IT pro side or dev side to see what you can do. And then the other side is the traditional one that we've focused on for the last year or so, monitoring applications. But I'd like to spend a little bit of time showing the back and forward between developer and operations around how our products work together and the pros and cons and the benefits to kind of allow that cycle of application lifecycle to continue as we move through updates, as we move through new versions of the applications. So yeah, I've cut down the slides quite a bit actually in the last 10 minutes. A traditional slide that we show for the last 18 months or so, that application lifecycle and the challenges that are faced between developers and operations, back and forward. And it becomes sometimes a pain point for the business. How long it takes to develop an application, how long it takes to make changes, updates to an application. Because developing operations working in the two little islands, and the business sits above that. And it goes, well, we're investing in updates, we're investing in new versions. We want that release cycle to come out as quickly as possible. The comments were made in our keynote yesterday around our release cadence becoming quicker. That's because internally we've started to use this framework for the last 2 to 3 years. And realized how quickly it allows for that cycle to move through when you stick with the integration between developer and IT professionals at various levels. So the traditional model is we do some planning with business. Business come up with a list of items. I want 4 buttons on that application. I want a red one, a blue one, a green one. Developers go away and they work on those applications. They work on those components, go through their relevant release cycles, testing, etc. Go back to the business. Yeah, you go. Business goes, well, now I'll ask for a pink one, a black one, and a yellow one. Why have you done red, green, blue? Well, no, you read in the planning, we did it like this. Anyone experienced that before as a developer? There's that disconnect between business and developers. And unfortunately, that disconnect increases the release cycle. It increases the back and forward. It also, unfortunately, increases the cost of deploying. So not very attractive to business to look at new versions, look at updates. So now with the integration of Office and TFS or Visual Studio, we have the ability for business, non-technical people, to actually start to create their own work items. Go on, there you go, use Excel, you know Excel. Go add your work items into TFS for me. And when it's in there, I'm gonna spend my time developing based on that. And when it comes time to show them the first version, it's gonna be based on what you requested as the business. From that, from the development stage, moving into the actual release. How do I throw this over the wall to the IT professionals and allow them to deploy that dynamically in the infrastructure? But before I get to that deployment, I need to go through this little testing cycle. And that is where we're trying to make it as dynamic as possible to basically enable developers to test on the fly, test quicker, have infrastructure available at the click of a button. Making developers dynamic shortens that release period, makes them more productive, and basically, at the end of the day, has benefits on both sides of that divide. So the first piece of demos that I want to look at today is really how do we connect those two components together? How do we look at TFS and Virtual Machine Manager? How do we allow those integration pieces to work together? The traditional lab management developers are used to, or lab center, how do we allow that to be maintained in the back end? Irrespective if we're running Hyper-V or VMware in the background, developers shouldn't worry where the infrastructure sits. So how do we focus on ensuring that he goes to one location and he can provision and he can test, whether it be on-premise or whether it be in Windows Azure? So the area that we want to focus on today is this piece in the top right-hand corner. A bit confused because I thought I'd hidden that slide, but obviously I didn't. That piece over there. So yes, developer operations. And for the last 18 months or so since this kind of methodology has come out, the focus really is on IT professionals. You monitor my environment and you tell me when something is wrong, when it's slow, impact, etc. But there's a lot more to that. Operations are able to make a developer's life cycle, life in general, a lot easier with regards to issues, dynamic provisioning, monitoring, flow backwards and forwards between any escalations that might have created. And that's the second piece that I'd like to have a look at towards the end of the session, is how do we use this monitoring and the new components that we have within Operations Manager and tie that back in to Team Foundation Server and allow developers to get a full view of what really is going on within their application that they've rolled out into production. And at the end of the day, ensure that business layer sees a dynamic layer below them with regards to development and IT professionals. Okay, so those are the three areas that I spoke about: business, develop, and operations. Business, they want to push out quick as possible. They want to carry on producing the item or selling the item that generates revenue. They don't want to know below, do you have physical or virtual? Are your two tools talking together? They don't want to know that piece. They want to know that we are creating and we're selling content. We're creating and we're selling devices. We're creating and content and selling objects, because that brings the money at the end of the day. It's really down to developers and IT professionals to start to tie those two components together. So using the agile processes and procedures that developers have become accustomed to and that they use on a day-to-day basis, how do we take that thinking across to the IT pro world? We're all working on dynamic data center, centralized management, but let's take some of those learnings that sit within Agile and bring it across, and vice versa. Allow the developers' world to become dynamic in how we're starting to provision our infrastructure and services, whether private or public cloud. With each of these, and this is the traditional model around the world, each three of these components certainly have different goals. Business, like a train, we're carrying on, we're making money. You just make sure I have my email and I can see my application. Then I'm happy. As developers, I want to become dynamic. I want to try new things. I want to try new components in the application. I want to try a different version of the application. But for me to do that, I need infrastructure. I need places to play with, test with, work with, rebuild, start again, rehash. As IT professionals, we're trying to keep the lights on. I want to make sure business sees their email and can see their application. And when the person is working from a coffee shop, he can still see his application. We're not too worried about giving you infrastructure. So the needs are very different. And as those needs grow, so does the gap between these three components. And we're trying to pull those together now with a lot of our product suites. So the release of TFS, of System Center, we're trying to bring that as closely together as possible. And you'll see more and more going forward in the next 12 to 18 months around the products working hand in hand to make life a lot easier. Okay, so the first piece that I'd like to have a look at, dynamic provisioning of infrastructure. So I'd like to start off by just showing you the configuration that's required and the various components. And then I'd like to take you through a flow of a developer from a developer's perspective requesting infrastructure. If infrastructure becoming available, allowing them to connect and use without having to log a call, log a ticket, email, put a request in for infrastructure with the IT professional. And then once that process is in the flow, go across and see exactly what's going on in the background for the IT pro on the other side and see how he's able to make this dynamic for this flow to work end to end. Okay, great. So over here, I have a really simple Windows Server 2012 server. I have, it's my TFS server. I just realized that I'm on the wrong server. But I did sell it quite well in the beginning. Yeah, I'm on the right server. I was very confident. I looked up the name and realized that I'd got it wrong. Okay, so I've got two servers that we'll play with today. First one, my TFS server. So within the server, I have two components. There's IT pros, probably look at this and go, that's interesting, and start checking your mail. Please focus on this piece. This is really important. Two very simple little things to integrate TFS and VMM. Normally, we look at a lot of our product sets and we talk integration, we look at setting up integration, we think, oh, that step-by-step guide I've got to work through. We're changing that model. We're trying to make it as seamless as possible so that they ensure that there's this integration between all of our product sets correctly. So two pieces. Firstly, the lab management configuration. On the right-hand side, it's a really simple wizard that you would run through for configuration. Give me the DNS name of the VMM server. That's it. I'll do the rest. As an IT pro, you would need to ensure, and we'll look at this on the other side, that you've got your access control set up correctly. So when the user or the developer comes across and logs in, he has access to what he's allowed to see within that environment. So yes, we make it dynamic, but we still keep control, we still keep standardization. Does anyone deal with VM sprawl? Any of the IT pros? Yes, move to virtualization. What the hell are all these 100 VMs in my environment all of a sudden? That's because it's easy to fire up, and we create them and we work with them. Doesn't matter if we don't get back to them, it's not the end of the world. So VM sprawl is all of a sudden pushing up the costs of having a dynamic infrastructure. So ideally over here, we'll configure and restrict through access control what developers have access to in the virtual infrastructure. At the same time, we make it dynamic where they can request and get information. So step one, give me the virtual machine manager's FQDN. Step number two, configure. So once you bring the connection set up between lab manager, between TFS and VMM, it'll automatically pull through the relevant components within VMM. The library shares and the host groups. So as an IT professional, you'll know that those are kind of two little boundaries that we can use. The library shares are where we can actually put content, put artifacts, ISO files, VHDs, that we've pre-built, predefined, and set up for the development team. Maybe it's all the MSDN software that developers can use. At the other side is the host groups. So that's what we would define within Virtual Machine Manager as the physical boundary, the rack of servers, the five rack of servers that we've set up just for the development team. If they sit within the host group, we define policy on those groups. We define how the optimization on those groups. So as a developer, I just connect, I get access. But as an IT professional, I've set up the restrictions on the other side so I can maintain my environment. I can ensure there's no VM sprawl, there's no configuration drift in my backend infrastructure. And those are the pieces we'll have a look at the second piece of this first demo around the IT pro side. So that's the two things, setting up lab management and setting up the configuration of which host groups and which library shares you would like to actually give the developer access to. Going into the backend, so VMM, as soon as I set that connection up, I get this little lovely item automatically created for me in my clouds. Visual Studio Lab Management and a unique GUID. In the current release, it has a lovely ID after it, but the idea is to move away from that, move much more to a cloud-friendly name and a lot more easily identifiable, so to speak. But ideally, that connection is set up immediately when I make the connection between TFS and VMM. Then I need to start creating the artifacts, so to speak. So if I jump down to the library, have a look at my VM templates, I can now start to classify and break up who has access to what. So let's create a development set of templates and create a set of production templates. In the development, we might scale down the resources less CPUs, less RAM, evaluation version of the ISOs, MSDN software, et cetera. Whereas the production templates, that can be our production software, license keys, configuration, settings, more RAM, more hard drive space, more CPUs. So we allow the developers to go in, access, build, test against, using those, that physical infrastructure that we've defined. When they're happy with the code, happy with the release cycle, say, yes, we're ready to throw it into production. Right, go back in and create the VMs. But the VMs will be based on production specifications and then run and deploy your application to those virtual machines. So in the background, we need to start moving towards this. Yes, we are defining how developers actually deploy content, but we also need to define ownership and cost and responsibility. So yes, we have this move across to show back and charge back. So now you have a prime opportunity. Develop your virtual machine templates, assign a cost code, assign responsibility with your access control, but now you can track and show value back to business. Well, business, you kicked off this project, it ran for 6 months, here was the usage stats through the relevant phases. Here was the planning phase, here was the development phase, here was the release, and here's where we run it into production. And there's an accurate cost that we associated to using that infrastructure for development and for production. All of a sudden, business looks back at IT, so IT is a developer and IT professionals, and sees value. It doesn't see a cost center. It sees value because now you're showing pictures and graphs, and that's what management understand. They don't understand resourcing. They don't understand XML. They want pie charts. They want helicopter views. They want to see things like that. That's real world to management. So when you start to take these VM templates and in association with developers build these templates, you're able to show a lot more than just provisioned VMs. You're able to show the full cycle to business on usage stats around the physical hardware that they've invested in your environment. Great, so we have some templates created. Our connection's been done. We've come into VMM, we've got access control through security groups, we've created our VM templates, and some, as a show of hands, who has not seen a VM template before I just skip over it? Everyone has seen you have not seen a virtual machine template. Okay, a quick for the ones that just show their hands, quick look at that. A VM template really is the configuration for that virtual machine as if it was physical. So what is the hardware configuration? What is the OS configuration? Are we going to add any applications, any SQL tiers to that? Are we going to have any dependencies? Are we going to assign control? Are we going to assign permissions based on that? Are we going to optimize? So ideally, we would build up this framework, and we would sit with the developers and work that out. And then based on the first release of deployments or the applications, say, you know what, we need to scale those a little bit differently. Let's change those templates. We need some more RAM. We need some more hard disk space. We need some more CPU. And we would optimize and make those changes. So it really is a matter of looking at the physical hardware configuration, the OS configuration, simple thing like naming terms. Really, really simple thing. It's just a naming convention. But what happens if you're sharing development and production in the same data center, possibly on the same racks of servers? So ideally, you want some differentiation here. If you start to change your naming conventions, it allows you to do a lot more later on. So from an orchestration perspective, I want to start to automate more. I want to start checking when last the developer used this infrastructure. Maybe it hasn't been signed in or started up for the last 60 days. Okay, well, let's decommission that. Let's bring down that VM sprawl. So little things like naming conventions, really simple, but in the long run, really good for maintenance and administration from an IT professional perspective. Okay, so our back end has kind of been done. Really, really quick fly through the back end. Now, what is the developer's experience to actually go and request these virtual machines and request these environments? Going back now to Lab Center, we've set up a connection. There's two key areas to focus on. The actual lab where you would build your environments and the library. The library is where you would store your environments and import your virtual machines and templates. That is the library of artifacts for the development team who access this project. The lab itself, that is where the environments will be deployed. And you have multiple ways of deploying those environments. And I will step through a couple of the wizards and show you the options you have through that. But ideally, from this interface, developers should be able to take and build and deploy their environment and then target to run their build scripts against. And at the end of the day, have a full test all the way through the cycle. Keeping in mind, this is targeting your private cloud infrastructure. We're looking at VMM, we're building to your private cloud in your data center. So a simple, quick run through the environment before we kick off the process. So from a library perspective, I don't have any environments stored in the library. I do have some templates that I've imported. It's a bit of a, this resolution's great when it's HD and when you show small text, but I have a few templates that I've imported. So step one, I want to import some templates. The IT professional, we've sat through, we've gone through the templates that I want, and I want to import some of them, and I can use them within my project. So all we do is say, import template. A couple of questions to step through, but basically, where is the template? And you see on the top left-hand side, basically says, where from VMM? So the configuration is done. It just goes, please find it within Virtual Machine Manager and import that template. Do a browse. Now I'm signed in with an administration account, and I'll have two views. Sorry, I'll have two items that I can see, development and production. Ideally, you would change it through access control so they would only see the relevant virtual machine templates specified for developers. They would not see the production ones. Ideally, we'd want the IT professionals to roll these applications out into production when we've agreed and we're happy with the code that we've been doing in the testing in our environments through the relevant phases. So yeah, I get to see those exact same templates we saw a little bit earlier on the other side. Again, naming conventions make it a lot simpler. Because as a developer, I would come in here, I want to pick like a shopping list. I want one of those, three of those, and I want to push out this environment. So simple things like large, small, SQL included, IIS included, little things like that, different types of architecture, go a long way for making a dynamic infrastructure between dev and IT pro. It also goes a long way, you see there's no back and forward. Yeah, but I asked you for IIS, and I asked you for 64-bit. Okay, well, sorry, we'll have to redeploy because we did 32-bit, and there's no more of that backwards and forwards bringing down the time to actually provision infrastructure. So what is the process? Select, choose a role if you want to. So we're importing a web server. Say next. And now we get a little pop-up box that says you cannot edit any of these properties because it's been defined outside of Test Manager. It's been defined within VMM. So those templates we've set up, done, ready to go. You could obviously, if you want to, make it a little bit more dynamic in your VM templates. You can start to build a little bit of variables into that, some answer files if you want to make it a little bit more customizable for developers. But as a simple show and tell, you can customize end-to-end any configuration piece of the VMs they're about to deploy in their environment. OS profile, locked down. There's my naming, product keys. If we want to put some product keys in, we could do that as well. The other option is we could also use answer files. Show of hands, who does not know what an answer file is? Okay, so a few. Okay, so it's basically in old Windows speak, you could use it like a text file, in new Windows speak, an XML file, that'll step through and answer all of the relevant components as an install runs through for Windows. So there's seven phases that an install runs through, kind of seven passes from beginning where you actually kind of format your hard drive all the way to the out-of-box experience at the end. Along that way, Windows needs some answers. If you don't give it an answer file, it takes a lot of defaults. Gets to the point where it says you pick a name. So up until that point, it's been defaulted, and then you customize after that. But all of those seven passes along the way, you can create an answer file. You can allow the developers to have their own tool to create their own answer files and just use those. So as we go through the process, the developer just changes the answer file for whatever reason, for whatever project, for whatever deployment he wants to get out or configuration he wants to get out. And you can associate those to the VM templates as well. Okay, right, so we say finish, and we've imported our templates. We have our set of templates over here now. So now we have our artifacts sitting in the library. Going into the lab as a developer now, I can start to build up my environments. So I have one environment running that's running already. There's a few VMs built on top of it. I'll use that in a few minutes to connect and show you the integration. What I'll do now is I'll kick off the process of actually building one of these environments. It takes about 20 minutes to build. So while it builds, I'll come back and I'll use this physical environment over here. So all we want to do is we want to create a new environment. We get two choices, a standard environment or a VMM environment. A standard environment is you building up an environment outside of the control of Virtual Machine Manager. So if you have infrastructure available to you, normally you would use that as a developer. You would use Lab Center and you'd work through that to use that infrastructure to build your standard environment. But with the VMM integration, we start to leverage a lot more on the other side. All the dynamic components that the IT professionals set up in the back end in the data center. So let's create a new one, and we'll just call it last session, just because that's how I feel today. Say next. Now we get the question, well, what do you want within this environment, and you know, how many of them do you want? Well, we want to do a bit of large SQL testing in the background, so let's take a large SQL, we'll do a small web server, and we'll test it on 32-bit. Add it to the environment, gets added on the right-hand side. Now you can come in and as a developer, you can rename those if you want. It's not going to impact the actual physical server name because we've already defined that in the template. Remember that variable that I throw in there with the ## on the end? So yes, we can rename this. This is for the look and feel with on our side of the wall as developers in when we provision and work with this environment. So we can say next. There's my, I can have a review of what's going on by each of these machines just to make sure, yes, that's the profile, that's the hardware I wanted, that's exactly what I needed. Now we have one little more option before we complete this. Enabling network isolation. So you also have the flexibility to go and take production running machines and use those in your environment and isolate them from the network. One of the configuration pieces in TFS was what subnet do you want to use, sorry, what VLAN do you want to use for network isolation? So you could have a separate VLAN altogether that you can provision running services from. It'll provision those VMs with the same name, same IP address, sitting in that environment. It'll append a second network card to them, because it's a virtual environment, and give it an IP address for that relevant virtual LAN. So if you needed to test against a real-world example, you can take a copy of what's running into this VLAN and test your code against it and go, oh no, that needs to be modified, that needs to be changed, or we're happy, let's go to release. So you could choose the option of doing network isolation. Okay, and a final review of all the components that we're going to deploy in this environment. Clicking verify runs through a few tests, take about 10, 20, 30 seconds or so. Basically, it's going to go and do a check and make sure that everything is okay on the other side. So do we have any environments with the same name? Do we have any VMs with the same name? Are we duplicating anything between Lab Center and Virtual Machine Manager? And I'll come back and say, yes, so all green, ready to go. We can deploy this environment. Say finish. And off that process goes. On the right-hand side, it's starting to do the actual work. But all that Lab Center has done is actually asked VMM to do the work. So if we go across to Virtual Machine Manager, and we go and have a look at our jobs, there, it's kicked off three new jobs. Is he creating those VMs for us? It's doing all the work. If I actually go and have a look at my cloud, there, it's kicked off my cloud, and my existing plus my new ones that are coming. And we can keep an eye on that and take about 20 minutes or so. In production, real-world servers, opposed to these little laptops over here, looking between 5 and 10 minutes on a production environment, and you'll have the environment built, ready to go. So when that process is finished, what is a developer able to do? So if we go back again to Lab Center, and I select that existing one that was there, really simple, I can use Environment Viewer, and I can spin up a connection to these VMs that allow me to actually start working either on the console as VMs, or I can RDP through to them on the other side and start to actually do physical work. So now all of a sudden, we've gone through the process of requiring an environment, certain standards, certain specifications, and I haven't had to put this long request process through. I can actually, at the click of a button, just pick what I need and start to provision on the fly. So great, I can make my connections, I can do whatever I want from this perspective. We also have the ability now, I want to test my code, I want to check, run my code against this. But now what if there's a failure? What if there's something I want to repeat, record? So then we can use Hyper-V snapshots. So within the same console, little snapshots button over here, kick off create snapshot. All that it's going to do is issue the command to VMM. VMM is going to talk to the hypervisor and start creating the snapshots for us. So now as a developer, I can just actually create my snapshots, roll back, test again. Maybe run a test, check it out and say to my colleagues, might be in a different location, please won't you have a look, this is what I've got back in this environment. Look, these are the results I've got. Can you see where the issues, do you know what's going on? So we're leveraging the functionality of Hyper-V and VMM to provision and make dynamic for us on the other side as developers to start working with and really working at a rapid pace. So at this point now, I can do my normal work, log into this machine, which I might have really given this machine a kick at the provisioning that large SQL box. I've given that SQL box some good resources. Did I click that? Yeah, it is time to. Let me just have a quick look. Okay, yeah, so it's spinning these machines up down at the bottom over here. Okay. That might take a few seconds to get going. Okay, yeah, it is. That host is taking a bit of strain. All right, so at this point, we've got to the point now where we've configured TFS to talk to Virtual Machine Manager. Really simple to set up. We have provisioned and created all these virtual machine templates that can be leveraged within VMM. We can build up a library of artifacts whether it be in VMM or within Lab Center. And now we have the ability for developers to provision infrastructure as they require. There is one other component to this, is that the route that Virtual Machine Manager is going down with its life cycle is to move down the service template orientation. So at a request, I want a full service built out. I want SQL, I want web, I want multiple webs, I want multiple SQLs. I want you to roll out SQL on top of that. I want you to add IIS and configure it like this. And then I dump my application down and I start to get that used in the environment. So in the current iteration of Virtual Machine Manager, the VM templates is the limitation. We don't stretch to service templates. A lot of manual work has to get done around using Orchestrator to actually, if you want to build out service templates. So the roadmap for VMM is to move down the service template route. That opens up quite a large view for developers of what they can achieve with their applications. So at the click of a button, I can ask for scale. I can say I need more web servers added to that environment. Please increase that service for me. Let me run my application, let me run my tests against that. So the roadmap that we have is really a large view of where we're going down around simplicity, as well as that dynamic integration between the relevant products. Oh, great, so yeah, that's real exciting. Took like forever to log in. Okay, you get the point of where we are around this. Useful, so for those that have not used this, would this be useful in a development environment? The ability to put requests in, does that take a little while? Does it take long to get IT pros to provision your infrastructure? So all of a sudden this becomes a lot more dynamic. We can also show real value back to the developers on the impact the hardware is going through when the application runs, when they do certain tests. So right, based on these templates, Yaz the output when you run your testing for your application. Yaz any exceptions that might be coming up. So we'll monitor that environment and give some real world feedback to developers before we release the application into production. Based on that, scale the infrastructure, make changes to the code, make changes to the application possibly. So little things like that start to bring the two teams together and become more dynamic across the board. Okay, so if I go back to Lab Center, let's get a view of what's going on here. Okay, so it's busy deploying and it's getting a view of what's going on. So at least as a developer, you get a real world view of where we are in this deployment process for this environment. Once it's deployed, you can take over and start to use the tools that you know to actually interact with this environment. The test agent is installed. So just one step back, these virtual machines were built, they were sysprepped. Before they were sysprepped, we installed the test agent inside of them. So the agent is there, it just sits in a dormant mode. As soon as we deploy them, they get installed and they get joined to the domain. As soon as the environment finishes, the last step that it does is communicating with the test agent, configuring the test agent. So we do a lot of work around the actual image that gets used to ensure it's dynamic end to end. Opposed to I deploy the machine, it's in the domain, and now as a developer, I have to log in, get the test agent installed, configure. We do that as part of the image build as well, to make it seamless end-to-end, just to allow you to focus on the development side of the relevant application. Okay, so that's providing a dynamic infrastructure. If we take another step back out now, we look at the other side of the cycle. The side where we've actually thrown this application out into production and it's running. How do we get real-world feedback of what's actually going on with that application? What is the performance stats? Are there any exceptions that I need to be aware of? Because maybe I only get a view of what's wrong with my application when a user logs a support call. So then it becomes very reactive to actually fix up these issues, make these changes, and possibly amend code on the fly. So ideally, and it's been around since release to become generally available since January of this year, the ability to monitor inside of the code. Give me a view of exactly what is going on within my application. What is the performance impact on the hardware? What is the performance around clients accessing my application? What is the performance around the servers hosting the application? So the roadmap around Operations Manager is to tie tightly into firstly the application monitoring, but also the ability to feed back into Team Foundation Server. Developers understand work items. IT pros understand alerts. So ideally, we want to take alerts and move them across into TFS as a work item to be addressed by the developer. How developers assign those, we'll have a look at in a few minutes, how the developers assign those is down to the organization, the development team, the structure, et cetera. Who's responsible for what area of the application? That becomes a piece that gets done within TFS. If required, we send it back to the operations team. I need more information. Please give me a real-world view of what happened with that application at that point in time. What happened before the exception occurred and what happened after? So the likes of integrating and allowing a developer to use IntelliTrace from the relevant item that's being created. And that's the piece that we'd like to have a look at now. Is that kind of integration setup, the monitoring, what's going on, as well as the alerting post-deployment of an application. First prize is to do this in the development stage. So using that development environment, using the development VMs, let's do a test. Let's actually run this process in development and really gauge as closely as possible what the impact is of load testing, thresholds that get hit, and then either amend code or amend the hardware that the application is going to run on in production. So this is Operations Manager for developers or IT pros who have not worked with Operations Manager before. Very similar to what I showed you a bit earlier, there's two components to the configuration. Man, this resolution blows. The two components are the actual synchronization between Operations Manager and TFS, and then the configuration of how and what do you want to monitor, and when and how should I be alerted to when something hits a certain threshold. So the first piece is the TFS work item synchronization. If I open that up and then we have a look at that, really simple what it needs. It needs a team project URL, and it needs to have an account that has contribute access within TFS. So if you have an account set up, ideally you'd have one account, that account should have the ability to contribute and basically create work items within TFS. So those are the two components that would be required. The URL that you want to actually send this content to, so for the project, and then based on that, what do you actually want to monitor inside of that project? So once you set that URL in, you select the account, the next tab will be populated for you, and it'll allow you to step through the actual components that you want to monitor within the application. And they might be multiple. This is a really simple example, but you might have multiple projects. Inside of those projects, multiple areas that you'd like to monitor, which translates back to components for us in Operations Manager side. Based on that, we know where to create the work items when these alerts come through. So that's the base configuration required on the Operations Manager side. Then selecting the actual application performance monitoring. What do we want to monitor and how, and when should we be alerted? The key areas, and this is a very important piece for the IT pros to sit down with the developers, and I mean that is rare these days, is to sit down together and understand, as a developer, what are you most interested in? Are you interested in how long it takes to go from the web server to the database? Are you interested more how long it takes a user to get to the website? Are you more interested in how long it takes the database to read or write? Little things like that are integral for input from developers' perspective. As IT professionals, they can set up all the alerts in the world. You get a flood of alerts, you'll pay less attention to them. Remember, those alerts are going to create work items within TFS. So ideally, before this is set up, the interaction has to be there between developer and operations to go, this is what we're interested in, this is what we want to monitor, and this is how frequently we want to make sure that we're alerted about it. And these are the thresholds we're interested in. The configuration is really simple. Basically, we'll look at server side, and we'll look at client side. We'll look at performance, and we'll look at exceptions. The key piece is, yeah, because as IT professionals, we can say, well, it's hit 90% CPU. But as a developer, you'd like to know, well, when it takes more than 3 seconds or takes more than 1 millisecond to do a certain component, I want to know about that. Because that piece has a larger impact to my entire application. If it's an online business, how long does it take to click checkout and actually check out? How long does it take to go from selecting to go to checkout? Do I lose customers along that way? If so, I need to know about that performance impact. If a person clicks on a page and there's an exception thrown, I need to understand that so I can proactively fix it before it becomes an issue within my call center. So let's have a quick look at those two components. So from a server-side perspective, and we don't have to monitor both. You can select performance or exception, or you can monitor both. Keeping in mind, the more you switch on, the more alerts that are going to come in. If an IT operations administrator sees alerts coming through, you go, well, these are assigned to the developers. Let's assign them. Go. It's going to create those work items. It's going to fill up your TFS project. It's going to look very unsexy to have all those work items in there. So the key thing is, turn on what you want to look at. Don't just enable by default as much as possible. So from an advanced settings perspective, I can climb in here now and actually have a look at the various thresholds. So from a performance perspective, what am I concerned with as a developer? And that is the key piece, because worldwide, traditionally, this does not happen with developers in IT Pro. IT Pro will set these up and you go, right, I'll take the defaults. Those defaults might not be relevant to the development team. So the encouragement you'll see coming out from Microsoft in the next probably year to 2 years until it becomes the norm, is this is where developers provide input around what needs to get looked at from a performance and exception perspective. And what do I want to be alerted from? Do I care about security alerts? Do I care about connectivity alerts? And the connectivity one is an interesting one. The traditional, my application is slow, your server is slow, the story has been around for a little while. But at the end of the day, we want to get a full view end to end. User comes in, he connects, he goes through, he reads or writes, is there an output at the end? Along that way, what has the connectivity been like? We might be so busy looking at the application and server level, we actually might have a network connectivity problem. We might have a real influx of data, a real influx of communication. So how do we become aware of that as well? So having that little box ticked actually starts to show real-world experience and real-world information that you can feed back and go, well, as development IT pros, networks, we've got a problem. They're going to know your server slow. No, your application. Just go and check that. No. Our stats say that this is what's been happening on the network for the last 30 days. Remember, pie charts, colors, that starts to make sense. So that is a very little interesting piece, because normally people uncheck that one and go, well, not to worry about the network. It's always up. It's always good. But that might show you some underlying issues between application and server that might go by the by. Okay, so we can set those up. Same with client side. We can come through and make changes from the client side perspective. Feedback on this one, develop an IT Pro and need to define these pieces together. IT Pro needs to explain to developers, well, this is what I can look at. Here's the list of what I can look at. Here's the list of what I can monitor. This is how often I can monitor it. And this is what I can do with it. As a developer, in all of those lists, what are you interested in? Performance exception, which one? I'm interested in both. Okay, from a performance perspective, what are the thresholds you want to be alerted by? How quick, how fast? From an exception perspective, how many is too much of an exception? Is 5 okay to handle? Is 500? You let me know, I will define that. Do you see how doing that picture in the development phase, in the development environment, becomes a lot easier to cater for? Because then you can change on the fly, and you can amend based on either code or performance from infrastructure perspective. Taking that to production makes it a lot easier to roll out with a lot less calls and work items being created within both infrastructures. Okay, so that's two pieces in the background. So the TFS synchronization, what permissions do I need? I need contribute permissions, and I can start to create work items, which is what developers understand when they log into their project. On the other side, what do I want to monitor, and how often do I want to monitor it, and what are the thresholds that I need to have based on performance or application monitoring? Now we step into actual monitoring itself. So as an operations support staff, the more items I get into my stack, the busier I'm going to be. The more items that come in, the less focus I'm going to have on the important ones. Traditionally, operations manager kind of gave you everything. There you go. He has everything we've seen. We've changed that model a little bit. Now we say, right, everything's off. You turn on what you want, and then we'll start to alert you and send you information. Operations manager can be a failure if the configuration that we've looked at now is not defined and set correctly. If you get a flood of alerts, people pay less attention to the important alerts or miss the important alerts. If you take those alerts and you send them on as a text message or an email, someone's going to get bothered on the other side. If you're creating work items within TFS, you're going to upset a lot of developers all of a sudden having these massive long lists of work items. So the little piece between configuration and defining what you should look at, very important to spend time understanding what the application needs to be monitored. Right, so we get a few exception and performance issues that are coming through here. And they're quite really simply labeled. Server application exception, performance exception. At this point now, as an operations person, I can look at this and go, right, I actually know what's wrong. We had a network dip. Great, that's what it's from. Let me just check the server. Yes, everything's fine. If these start to come through, And we look at these and go, well, everything's fine on infrastructure as far as we're aware. Now we need to move this on, because obviously there's a problem with the application. Let's move this on, allow the developer to investigate and say, you know what, the application's fine, but the server resources have to change. There's a timeout. There's a problem over here with the interaction between client and server side. So based on that, we start to move in a bit of a workflow now. So alerts and work items that I spoke about earlier, here's the first piece, the alerts. So basically, I can take one of these alerts. There's a new one that's come in over here. Let's just say set resolution state. And I get a few options. These are the two important pieces over here. These are the two changes we've made in the last little while with Operations Manager. I assign this to engineering. As soon as I click that step, it creates the work item in TFS. Once it gets to TFS, Operations Manager stands back and waits. Based on what the developer does on the other side in TFS within Visual Studio, it'll either feed back, requesting more information, or it'll get fixed and closed off on the other side, and feedback and the alert will be closed. So now the workflow starts to set up between operations and developer. So if I go and I say, assign to engineering, little box picks up, it's updating the alert, and we start to get a lot of information down over here. This information is important because this information is what an operations person understands. He understands the alert information. He understands the diagnostic side of what's actually gone through when this alert has come through. But this information is the same information that goes across to the developer on the TFS side. So if I go back now and I log into Visual Studio, and the comment was made at lunchtime, if you want to clear a room of IT pros, open up Visual Studio, which I thought that didn't help me much preparing for the session. But ideally, we'd open up Visual Studio, connect to our project, and start to actually see what operational issues have come through from the ops team. So if I connect to TFS, I've created a simple query that deals with operational issues. Whoops. So for the IT pros in the room, I've just created a simple query that I can reference every time, just show me the work items that are operational issues, and those are the alerts that we've assigned across to engineering. So if I run that query, I start to get a view of what's actually going on in my environment. Right, so there's one that's come through. I think that is the last one I sent through now. Basically, it's come through and said, right, we've exceeded a threshold. So the configuration I showed you a few minutes ago, it had the default threshold in of 5,000 milliseconds for the one performance counter. So right, so now that's come up and popped up and said, well, we've exceeded that. Developers, you need to have a look at that. That's the threshold you agreed with us. We're letting you know that it's hit that threshold. Or that it's exceeded that threshold. As a developer now, we can have a look at this and go, right, that is a problem. I need to assign that to someone within the team. So I can go into this now, open that up and say, yes, I'm happy with that. I accept that and save that work item. So we've acknowledged the incident. We can maybe give it a priority severity if required. But the key thing now is we want to provide more information to the developers. And this is where this becomes very important. So the properties, product knowledge, and links and attachments, we can start to attach content, IntelliTrace logs, more information, push them across to an application diagnostics page where they can get a full view of exactly what's been going on in the environment. So at this point now, I can say, right, I actually want to have a look at a bit of a deeper view. Give me a view of what's actually been going on in the environment from a development perspective. It's only 12:18 p.m. It's lunchtime. This thing should hurry up. Okay, so there's the actual event ID and the information that's attached to it. Now I can step through this and go, okay, now I get a full view of what's going on in my environment with regards to how long it's taken. Yes, it's taken 7,200 milliseconds, close to 7,300 milliseconds. That's exceeded the 5,000 limit. So let's get a full view of what's actually been going on within this environment. Now this information, developer and IT pros understand. But now we've gone through that chain of events where we're able to assign responsibility to people who can actually resolve and fix the applications. If this information is not enough, and we can't go down the path as developers of we require more information, we can send this back to the operations team and say to them, you know what, I need more information outside of what has happened before and after this error occurs or this exception occurs. So within TFS, now we have this alert that's been given to us, we can go down and start to do a little bit more. So we can go down, start the IntelliTrace collection, either ourselves or let the user repeat the issue that has generated this exception alert, and then stop. So basically take a point in time snapshot of what has actually happened, wrap that up, and pass that across to the development team. We can either include it in that call that's gone across as a work item, or we can stick it on a network location and allow it to become across for developers to access. One key thing to remember around this, if you do set this up, IntelliTrace logs can grow quite large. So if you're going to start to send this backwards and forwards between Operations Manager and TFS, you're going to have a bit of an impact across the network. What is really handy is to store the network location and allow a developer to go and access it and see exactly which one he wants to get access to. So now we have this flow, this backwards and forwards flow between the two environments. We've provided dynamic infrastructure. It allows for us to move through those first few phases, the planning, the development. We can start to do Operations Manager and monitor at that stage, because that really is first prize. Getting real-world view in the actual development phase before we've gone into release. Tweak, modify either hardware, network, application, code, and then get out into production. And then deal with probably a lot less issues along the way because we've gone through a thorough testing. Traditionally, why we don't have that full cycle is because of time. The release cycle starts to grow and you start to go and do testing through all of those stages. So now, with the ability to dynamically provision infrastructure, we've shortened that period. We have dynamic monitoring, so we've shortened that period. So now, all of a sudden, we can get a lot of work done in the development phase for IT Pro and developers, not just developers on their own anymore. The move across, when we throw it over the wall to get rolled out into production, that becomes dynamic. That, however, has always been a gap in our suite of products. We've never had a real full release cycle or release component that allowed us to do that handover officially between developers and IT operations. Now, however, I'm sure as developers, you've noticed we've purchased a piece of software from InCycle called InRelease, and that is now going to be incubated into this full story that I've spoken to you about. The ability to assign ownership to various components or various personalities in all of those cycles. So the planning, the development, the actual release and operations afterwards. So now we have that full cycle tying all of the components together. So if you're not aware of it, InRelease is the product to have a look at. And that is what we're going to start to incubate and bring into our product suite going forward. So we have the cycle. And yes, we're enabling more and more. Our roadmap is to enhance the features, enhance those components between IT professionals and developers. This is the view that we have around developer operations. So we look at developer, we look up to IT, but we also include business. So using the likes of Office feeding in to the developers. We also look at the dynamic provisioning as infrastructure, as IT professionals, providing that back to developers. So we look at DevOps. Yes, that's a nice methodology. But we look at it a little bit more around our product suite and the roadmap we're going down. If you'd like to understand a little bit more around the different components, you're more than welcome to tweet me, email me, and I have a great set of documentation around deploying this infrastructure end to end. This really is something that needs to be worked on around IT Pro and developers with regards to each cycle or each update as applications come out. So one kind of last slide I can show you to close off this little piece now. And I skipped through my hidden slides. Those are. It's just an overview of the requirements you would need to put this in place. So taking into account business, we're spending a lot of time on the Office side building plugins, building integration for Visual Studio for Office. We're going to be spending more and more time doing that. So using the likes of Excel to create work items, using the likes of PowerPoint to do storyboarding. Business, show me exactly how you want this to work. I want it to work here, I want to click here, I want to do that. Great. I take that, that gets fed into my planning stage as a developer. I feed all those items into my central repository, and I have those artifacts available to me. So looking at Team Foundation Server and the move as we've gone from 2012 into 2013, we're enhancing that more and more to enable developers to have that integration of pushing and pulling content between business and development. As an infrastructure person, the ability to create a library, create a repository of content that can be pushed and pulled by developers, allowing them to use infrastructure dynamically without having to go full cycle. The one piece that was not shown up here, and it becomes a bit of a manual process at the moment, is leveraging all of this with System Center Orchestrator at the bottom. allowing to build a bit more workflow, a bit richer content around the workflows, to actually say, right, you can provision automatically, build your environments as a development team. But we're going to come behind once a month, once every 2 months, once every 3 months, and we're just going to check exactly what you're doing. In other words, are you still using that infrastructure? No, right, let's decommission it. And free up those resources for you to build more infrastructure for your next project, increase resources for your existing project. So orchestrator starts to play in that. At the moment, it's kind of a manual process that you'd have to set up and push out into your environment. And then the last piece to kind of close off that cycle, the management side. What is actually going on in my environment, and how can I start to alert and create a dynamic workflow for our developers? And that's where operations manager would come into. Visual Studio, the key entry point for developers into this infrastructure. This last slide is what I'd like to kind of just finish off around the DevOps value to business, the actual participation for once in that life cycle. Remember that life cycle I showed you? Business stands outside like a little stepchild. You know, it's just like, I want to be part of that, please. Business needs to be involved in that. It'll shorten down your first piece. It'll make it a lot easier for the no more backwards and forwards around that. So DevOps allows for that. But we obviously need to bring we need to bring business into that. And Office integration allows us to achieve that. As a developer, spending less time around the planning and developing and releasing, making it quicker. The sooner I get the update out, the sooner I get the new version out, allows me to come back and start on a new dynamic version. Make some changes on what I can do. Spend more time testing my product end to end that I'm going to push out into production. One last thing that I didn't mention in the beginning was the IT professionals being involved right in the beginning. When developer and business are getting together, I want the application to look like this, I must have 17 of those, 4 of those, I want it to run in 3 languages. If IT professionals are involved in the beginning, they'll say, okay, well, just one thing to mention, when you run this application out in Asia, you run this in Africa, we don't have infrastructure there. So just please keep it in mind when you do your costing for your budgets. Yes, we can help you with that, but then you're gonna have to inject some investment, some cash. And that'll allow us to provision for that. Opposed to getting right to the end and throwing over the wall and going, IT Pro, please release that for me and deploy it. Where do you want it to go again? Africa. Well, that's very far. And there's no infrastructure there. That's real world. That's real world discussions we have with our customers every day. I picked on Africa. I come from Africa. I picked on them as a part of the world. But engaging in the beginning is something that's always been a no-no. IT Pro will come to you when you're ready to throw it out. That becomes a real DevOps discussion when you include all three areas into that full cycle, ensuring we get this continuous delivery all the way across. The benefits, I can release quicker. I'm more agile. Those are the words that developers understand. As business, they understand those words as well, just from a different context. The quicker you release, the faster I can sell it. The more updates you make, the benefits I get to my customers. The benefits both sides. As IT pros, I'm able to start moving towards a dynamic environment, dynamic data center, dynamic deployment, dynamic monitoring. That makes an IT professional life so much simpler, so much easier. From a related content perspective, there are two pieces that are worthwhile looking at. If you're not able to attend it in person in session, maybe pull the content offline. But Dev 316, I would encourage IT professionals in the room to go and attend that session, go and view that session. Understand the roadmap where developers are going around Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server. Where are they going around creating applications? Where are they moving around deploying applications on-premise as well as the public cloud? Because guess what? We can deploy applications to the public cloud. That's been around for a little while now. IT pros are struggling to catch up to that little piece. Why? Because we're so busy deploying and monitoring and fixing problems on the other side that we're not focused on the dynamic side of things. So I really encourage IT professionals to attend that dev session. And the testing one is really a nice little piece that I think has been very quiet. The session before us, a young lady came up to ask the speaker and said, the discussion became around Azure. How do I use my MSDN benefits to actually build a testing environment? I don't have data center. I don't have that. But I want to build, I want to play, I want to test the new stuff. So we're spending a lot of time around developing applications to run. Thank you very much for coming. I've got 16 minutes left. I try to kind of cram it all together. If you want the slide deck, there's a lot more slides within that to kind of build up that full story, a lot of content, a lot of URLs in the notes section. Either send me a direct message me on Twitter, or email me. My email address is morgan.webb@microsoft.com. It's web with 2 Bs. I will gladly share this content with you. I also have some great DevOps slides in PDF format, really high resolution ones, that are meant to be stuck up in a wall. It's new ones that have been created in the last few months by Microsoft. That full cycle, who plays what, who does what in that full cycle. If you'd like some of those slides, please let me know. I will gladly send them and pass them on. The only one ask I have from you, please fill out your evaluation forms. That's the only ask I have. We really require that information back from you. It kind of governs your thinking around the roadmap we have, the view we have, where we're going, good, bad, yes, no, what about this? That really is important to get that feedback from you as attendees in the room. So again, with that, thank you very much for attending, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the week around Ticket. Thank you.